When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be, oh, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. And when the broken-hearted people living in a world agree, there will be an answer, let it be. For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. There will be an answer, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be, oh, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be, oh, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. And when the night is cloudy, there is still a chance that shines on me. Shine until tomorrow, let it be. And when the night is cloudy, there is still a light that shines on me. Shine until tomorrow, let it be. I wake up to the sound of music. Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be, oh, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be, oh, let it be. There will be an answer, let it be, yeah. Let it be, let it be, let it be, oh, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be, oh, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be.
Well, thank you, Primo. Mm. That was different.
Yeah.
And, and wonderful. Thank you. Mm. Mm.
Because we spoke about this last
time. What's that?
In the last satsang, we spoke about this song.
We did?
Yes.
Good. I'm glad.
Let it go, let it be.
Yeah, let it go is a little, it's got a little barb to it. It's got a little hook to it because, yeah, I remember that. That's right. Yeah, the difference. That's right. Thank you, Primo. That's really wonderful. Thank you. Om Shri Satche Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, Paramatma Ki Jai, Gurudev Bhagawan Ki Jai, Satchasanga Ki Jai. Before you come in today, we were talking about forgiveness last week, and I was speaking in a rather spiritually mature manner, because after a while you don't forgive. You just don't. You don't bother with it. It's between this person and their karmic consequences. It's between this person and God. It's between this person and who they are adhered to. It's between this person and their own heart. So eventually, we don't bother with it. We don't even think about it. But then there might be those people who do. So, first off, I would still go to the spiritually rather mature point of, cease to hurt yourself with anything that has hurt you from anyone else. And I will tell you two stories about forgiveness. I remember this one case where it was a murder case. I watch oftentimes court cases to, I just like to observe the law. It's something that I really like to do. And there was a murder case, and the case was that a policewoman somehow got in the wrong apartment in her apartment building, somehow, and they accused her of that this was on purpose. That couldn't be proven, but it could be proven that she shot a man by entering the wrong apartment. She thought, oh my God, who's this man, and shot him. Well, he was in his own apartment. This was the problem, see. And so the court case went on, and it was interesting. And some court cases are, at the first, they're really boring. They're like, but after a while, they're very interesting how things work together and the outcome and so like that. And this was a black family and a white police officer, woman police officer, which always causes more friction in the United States because, just because. We're not going to go into that. We don't need to. And during the sentencing of any court case in the United States, murder court case,
Wow.
the family gets to come in and make a statement about how they feel about what has happened. They address the person that has caused the problem. And the young brother who loved his elder brother who was killed so deeply, he said, really, all I can do is forgive you. And he says, all I want for you is the best in your life. That's all I want for you. He says, I don't want anything bad to happen to you. And he looked at the judge and he says, Judge, can I hug her? And the judge said, go ahead. And the whole courtroom melted. And nobody's forgotten that particular forgiving case, big one. So if somebody says something to you that's not kind or something, it's hard to tell what you are not forgiving or what you are forgiving. There's so many situations that could be very hard, or it could be really quite easy. Your neighbor's loud, or your friend said something wrong about you, or something like that, to the point of having a relative killed. So everybody in the court, particularly the woman who murdered, they say it was a murder. There's different categories of this black man. She was stunned. And there's another case that's really very interesting. I just tell you these sto two stories, then we can move along with satsang. But I'm telling you them for inspiration, for your own forgiving strength. Forgiving is an interesting word, to forgive. Before it's given. Before, for. Anyhow, this happened, I believe, in Ohio in the United States, where a gunman came in, there you go, and killed four children. I think they were all girls, in an Amish community school. And you can look both of these cases up. They're very interesting. One would be, if you wanted, you can see it on Google. One would be female police kills black man in wrong apartment. And this one would be four young girls shot in Amish schools. And to read it is quite interesting because it gives it even a deeper dynamic than I can give it right here. So these four children were killed, and the Amish, well, they burnt down the school and they rebuilt the school. And they went to the funeral of the man who committed suicide after he killed the four girls. So the Amish people ended up at that funeral blessing the families. And they also got together college funds for the murderers' two children. So they set things right. And forgiving is setting things right, at least for you. Those children would never be again. And that black man, that wonderful neighbor, who they say was quite a good character. And so what if he was a good character or not? He didn't deserve to be killed in his own apartment. And his brother set things right in his own heart. And his mother, the mother of the young brother, was stunned. She said that she had no idea that her son would do that for his brother. But he set things right for his life. He set things right. And the Amish set things right for their lives and for the lives of the children and family of the murderer. So that's pretty severe, isn't it? I just want to put that out as inspiration in case your friend says something not so nice about you that you could easily say, I'm going to set this right with myself. I'm not going to give it more attention than, my thoughts can give it a lot of attention, but I'm not interested in those thoughts. Holding. Repeating, actually, you can't hold anything. You have to repeat it. And that's something that's very interesting. You can't hold a thought. It's impossible to hold a thought. Impossible. It's not possible to hold a thought. You must repeat it. So you repeat and you repeat and you repeat and you repeat. Maybe not you. I'm just speaking about the big you. What means the you of possibility. Repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat and disturb and disturb yourself and disturb yourself and disturb yourself. Oftentimes for nothing, sometimes because you really have been hurt very deeply. And in the end, it's all the same, even though for one thing, there may be a bit of a scar, and for another, it heals up real quick. It all comes to setting things right for yourself in your life and turning around and blessing, I would, the perpetrator, the one who was not so kind to you, the one who hurt you in this way or that. So, not to dismiss forgiveness altogether, but eventually you will. Eventually, you'll just move on. Eventually, you won't have to think that you're the forgiver. And eventually, you'll know that all action creates consequence, good or not so good. And you leave it up to that person to reap the consequences of their actions. And so you can move along and you don't have to be inundated and drowned in anyone's actions towards you at all, even a murder, even four children murdered. So, let's see, are there any hands up yet? There's one, Sahara. Sahara, please.
Namaste,
Namaste, Sahara.
Shantimai. I remember when that the Amish that event occurred.
Yes.
We tracked it as it was unfolding.
Yes.
And there was an interview somewhere of one of the of somebody from the Amish community. I don't know if it was a family member of one of the children or not, but it was after the funeral, and they were interviewing about this forgiveness. And the response of the person being interviewed was, "I am still forgiving him. I cannot
Oh
say I have yet
yeah. Yeah, that's
forgiven."
it. But in the process, isn't that right?
But it was an active, right? It was it brings an incredible wellspring of sadness and wonder and awe that that community was
It was a very solemn,
prepared.
sad, deeply
Oh.
sad situation. It was incredibly sad. It was really heavy. For the Amish, never had anything like that happen. Not that Amish are perfect people. We're not talking about their perfection or the light that streams out of their community. There's a lot of problems in the Amish community. That's not the problem. The point is, four young girls were killed. The Amish had never had people come into their school and just shoot it up and then kill themselves in front of, and the Amish went to the funeral. Treated the family extremely well in a very solemn and very sad atmosphere. Everything was mouth down. And in the end, forgave the murderer and picked up for the children of the murderer that they could go to college, help them. So what did that do? I mean, that healed the heart of the people. That applied the good medicine. And as the woman said, who you remember, and I remember that too,
Yeah, an entire community and an entire generation.
Well, she was applying the medicine. She was going to have to apply it every day. But she applied it and she was going to get well. And I think it was one of her children, actually, was one of her who passed. So, yeah, so senselessly, a waste. Yeah. Anyhow, there it is. So there it is. That's for Bola not to wake up. So that's the way it is. Ah. So any hands, anybody ready for our conversation and satsang? Ken. Yes, Ken.
Namaste, Guruji. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. Thank you for sharing the beautiful, inspirational stories.
Yeah, hard ones.
And
Huh.
yes, very hard ones. Yeah. And that brought to mind actually the topics of thoughts and repeating thoughts and it, where we place our attention and mental well-being. Because obviously, not obviously, I'm assuming that the perpetrator in the Amish murder was mentally unstable, you know, and whatever it was.
Sure.
Because what you said before about thoughts, how and where we place our attention, and what you mentioned before about Swami Muktananda saying that where we
That was
place our attention is what we worship.
that's in the new Gita, the 10th chapter of the Gita, isn't it?
Yes.
You picked that up very fast.
And that brings me to the question of language, actually, what the word worship means, because that brings up lots of different connotations, actually.
Well, Will just asked that question yesterday,
Oh, okay.
and I just wrote it down. Did you see the glossary?
No,
Well, there's a
that
glossary
has,
in that
okay,
chapter.
no.
Okay, well, the glossary is very important because it sheds a light on who the characters are, who the mythical animals are, and so on like that. Short. But it's there. So worship literally means love. And I was telling to Will that worship is not demeaning. It's not gross. It's not like, oh, yeah, like that. It is like this. It's admiration. It's looking up to someone, but it all culminates, whatever you can say about worship culminates in love. Love can be called worship.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Because in the Gita, very many times Krishna is speaking about worship me.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Yeah, and what he means to say, and I don't know, I haven't actually looked at the Sanskrit word. If I look at the Sanskrit word, I can tell you probably about the translation a little better. Because if it has to do with hridaya, or if it has to do with prem, or if it has to do with this, or it has to do with that, if it has to do with admiring, then worship is a good translation, but it can be mistranslated by people. How did you think about worship before you understood that worship is literally divine love?
Well, because there were times when, I mean, I didn't have any personal view on it. I suppose I did. But from what I've heard was like some would be negative connotations of like it's a dirty kind of word that you are just so like being submissive to someone else
Well, what's
or
wrong with being submissive?
That's an interesting question. Yes.
I mean, oftentimes we put really negative. I can imagine the negativity of being submissive. Also, imagine the beauty of being submissive. Different atmosphere, different approach altogether. But I can imagine, I'm quite submissive to you. My life is really to serve you, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So that's. And that's an interesting word, submission. Huh?
Submission, yes.
Submit
Below mission,
when we turn
submit.
something in, also, huh? When we say, here it is. I submit my
I submit, yes, yeah.
submission. So I can see the beauty in submission. I can imagine, for me, it's not hard to be submit, sub in a state of submission to what I can creatively imagine, but cannot imagine the scope and detail and exquisite mystery of God. I don't mind being submissive at all. I mean, how could you stand over that? And
Oh, yeah.
it's out here, and it's right there,
Yeah.
and it's right in the room. It's the hall of cognition, and so we get a kind of edginess, but I get that edgy side too of submission and the word worship. But worship means love, and it really means love. What people want for themselves. That kind of love. How they want others to submit to them. Isn't that interesting?
That's
I'm not
it.
a submitter, but
If you submit to me, that's great. That's fine. And the other topic was about mental well-being, actually, Guruji, because I find it quite difficult with knowing how to help someone with mental well-being issues. I mean, last week, Pramod sang or chanted Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and you were saying that's for people with mental ill health. And so I had this patient, 50-something, and he's jobless and staying with or living with his mum and her partner and in debt and all that. And he's phoned so many times, actually, to various people saying he wants to kill himself. And that he has not had the courage to do so because he tried it once and it didn't work out so well. They said, I want someone to help me die. I said, you know, that's not how it works in this system. We can't do so. Then he kept saying, repeating the whole story again. I said, you know, life is precious. It's only precious to someone like you who's got a good job and something to look forward to, not to me. And because I thought about what you said before about how Tibetan sea life as being so rare, a human form that. Yeah, the turtle in the sea story. But if, I didn't relate that to him, of course. And so when I came across him again another time, I thought, I'll say this to him. I said, you know, you've phoned so many times and you're not getting any help from any medical person. What do you think would help you? And he turned it around and he said, do you mean that medical team can't help me anymore? I said, well, kind of in a way. I didn't know what else to say to him. I just want to kill myself, he would just say. He would just threaten that. And the whole theme about mental illness and well-being, I see it so much more these days, actually, in the world.
I stay away from it. Well, because I'm not skilled in it. I don't stay away from it in my prayers. I wouldn't stay away from it in kindness. I wouldn't stay away from it in investing my heart in the love for someone who is mentally fragile. But I am not versed in mental I wouldn't know the first thing about how to bring a person around except for to be kind to them. And sometimes kindness is like, get off of your dead butt and get going. You know, I mean, sometimes it is like that. Sometimes it is like that. People don't like to hear it. You know, they want all this softness, but sometimes not supporting a person being lazy and lethargic is the best kind of love. It's the deepest love, because you're not invested in whether that person stays around you or not. You just want to see what needs to be heard. And also that has to come from a place of loving that person, not hating that person, not demeaning that person. And the other is quite different. Even it can be very strong, very straight, very severe, but there's a heart in it. There's an investment in it. So I'm not good with it because I'm too straight. I don't like to I'm not
Well,
willing
I
to.
think that's what some people need a lot of times, and that's what's lacking, I feel, in the medical profession, because I don't think
anyone can really say that they're skilled these days anymore. I see so many people going through the revolving door, just being in the system and stuck in the system, and no one seems to know how to help that person or people anymore. And they just feel like we're trying all these things. Put them on more medications, medications, medications. They're really like, wow, on so many different medications. How do you even survive?
Well, I'm not going to get into the politics of this because I could say
No.
so.
Yes. Yes. But what you said about kindness and all that, I feel is so important, because I feel that it is generally lacking. And in some cases, it's because people get, I mean, they get so stretched by not knowing how to deal with helping someone with that illness anymore. So they're overwhelmed and yeah, and just overreact then in that case, and forget about the kindness, the love, the care that can be a balm.
Let me come in here. Your friend sounds like they are not mentally distraught or very delicate. Not really. You might ask him what he wants and how he's going to move in that direction, and not ask him to answer you. You don't need the answer, but he may. That might be a very good pondering for him. He may find out a lot in that.
Thank you, Guruji.
You're welcome. Namaste.
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 There has been so much said already. I was really inspired by what has already come. So I will start with the with this terrible killing in the Amish community. What struck me, what really landed like, was when you said they burned the school
Oh,
and built
yeah.
goosebumps. It's such a strong, but in a way, it's a ritual, right? It's just,
Well, it got rid of the energy. That's what they said, that
yes.
couldn't put their children in that school anymore, so they burn it.
Yes.
And they built a new one in another place.
That somehow I reacted to that really strongly. I thought that was in the sense of the story, it was absolutely wonderful, wonderful thing to do.
It was a
And
long time ago. That it was more than a decade ago, I think.
so what came up for me was that I have a theme with ritual. I think it started now doing the chanting the Gayatri for Satchadam every day, a kind of ritual that surprisingly, it comes really easy, and I love it. And at the same time, I often feel at loss. So I navigate by the words you gave us, and I copy as so long as I find my own. And that's, I
What are you
think,
talking about? What words are you talking about?
well, like starting with the blessing. I'm not used to say blessings, so I just say the ones you suggested.
Did I suggest any
Yes.
words?
You did. Thank you very much. You said in the, I think in the introduction, you said something like, you could do it like this, or you
Oh,
could
okay.
say these words, and you can start like this. And it was a su suggestion to find our way.
Yes. To
And
find
so
your
that's, yes. So that's what I realized I'm doing now. And I'm thinking about ritual. And then before going into chapter 10, I reread and listen to part two of chapter 9 of the Bhagavad Gita, and there's so much about worship. Krishna talks a lot about worship, and then he says, I'm reading the simplified version, forgive me. It's the one that goes very easily. It's an offering a leaf, a flower, a fruit, a cup of water. I will accept it if given with a loving heart. And I thought, that's so easy. That's just a flower. It doesn't have to be riches. It doesn't have to be anything special. A flower is special. It's special enough. That also gives me goosebumps, that it's just wonderful.
Yeah.
It's so much easier than I thought, is what I'm saying. So
if you find that all that you find in real, true spirituality, not trendy nonsense, is very simple.
Simple, yes.
That's why people don't know it.
I find that very inspiring. So it's not the thinking about how to do it. It's more the going into the heart and find it there, and it can be really simple. That's what I'm learning right now, very practically.
You know, I don't know, what about practicality? I hear this oftentimes, practical, practical. What if it's not practical? I just leave it with you that way. I hear people say that oftentimes, and I'm not against it. I just wonder why they have to categorize their spirituality, kind of put it in a category in their life so that it looks like it's logical.
Oh, okay. No, I think when I say practical, I mean just the things, that it can be a flower, it can be a leaf, it can be...
Ultimately, it's your entire life.
Yes. That's okay.
This life or next.
Hmm.
Something wonderful. I think maybe I showed this before. I don't know. This is my little Gita, right? It's almost...
Rupees.
Do you know if it is still in print?
Oh, yeah, it is. It is
I
still...
Write.
Now it's 20 rupees.
Yes, I will write to you and get the details, because I have so many Gitas now I can look to, also some online, and no wording is like the other, and yours is usually the best.
I love it. I love
yes.
it. And, you know, I want to tell you a story that's very intimate to Taradasacha. And I want to first see the participants to see how many hands I have. Okay, one more. That's great. This is very interesting. It's about offering. It's about offering.
Yes.
So Antisa brought some people here that she has been working with for a long time, some of them, and wonderful, wonderful people. She brought them here for a week. We had a very good time together. I would see them. I think I saw them three times, something like that. And one evening I was sitting here, and you might remember that there's a photograph of a little gnome, or a painting or something, of a little gnome and a little mouse and something else right over my head where I sit in the living room. And one of the guys said, "Can I ask you why you have that particular picture there?" And I said, "Yeah, because we, to remember, to keep in view the nature of spirits." And his eyes, he was very wonderful, because he didn't go, "Oh boy," like that. He didn't. He was curious, and openly curious. And he would decide later, or while I was talking, whether he was going to go in that direction or just shut it down for himself. But there were other people there, so we were going to talk about it. And so I told him, I said, "You know, here in, we live in nature, and we have to pay attention." And I told him, I said, "We feed the nature spirits every day. And And you were here. When we offer food to Maharaji, put it back into the food so it's prasad all of a sudden by his grace. These are all kind of rituals, but they're meaningful. And so I said, well, the reason we began to give it food every day is because we found out that it was the nature spirits who were speaking to us through broken machines. The water wouldn't come. The furnace broke down. The tractor broke down. All these things would break down, and it was hard. It's a big work for Indra to get it back in shape. There's no doubt about that. And Peter helps, and Premveda helps, and it all gets like, particularly with the furnace and the water and so like that. So I was telling him what a jumbled mess it can be when we don't remember them. So the first day that they were here, I yelled out the window, "Are you feeding the nature spirits?" And I don't remember getting a response. And I think maybe I just called that out to see if they were or to remind them. So when I'm okay, I have to put it in perspective. I have to put it in some kind of order. So the furnace breaks down. The water's not, there's no hot water. The car gets hit. And I'm going, why is this happening?
This is the day after we had that.
No, this is the day, this is the same day.
No,
Oh,
no,
maybe
you told Eric
no.
the night before about the elementals and then the day
Yeah, this was
after.
the d next day. Yeah, that I told about the elementals, the nature spirits, and the next day, all of this stuff started happening. And they were in the market, and I told them about it. And they said, "Oh my gosh, it must be, what she was talking about." And I asked Antisa, I said, "Have you fed the nature spirit?" She said, "No." The moment we approached them with our heart, our imagination, and our we're sorry, things started running again. We've lived here long enough to see what that means. That there's a spirit of nature. They're called gnomes, they're called fairies, they're called we don't really, one way or the other, the birds, the plants, the flowers, the leaves, the water, the fish, the dogs. We have to give that spirit some attention. And when we do, things run smoothly here. And when we don't, things break down severely so that it's a real problem for us. So offering a flower to the heart of God, which lives in you, which is alive in you, and that memory is such a submission. Such a worship, such a moment. We just give the nature spirits once a day a little water and some food from our kitchen. But it is that recognition that keeps things running smoothly here. And it's that little flower that you give to Krishna or Jesus or Buddha or the mystery. Or the love in your heart that makes all of the difference, all of the difference. And it's so simple. It's so simple. And sometimes, I'm lighting a candle for Donnie every night. And sometimes it's very rare, but sometimes it's very automatic. And I always offer prayers for the people. That's just something I want to say too today. I always, every night, I offer prayers to the people who have asked me to pray for them. Rarely, but once, I cannot say that is not automatic. There may be a prayer that I say 3 days in a row, but I always change it a little bit, but I have a very specific formula for that. When I go to light Donnie, oftentimes I'm talking to him about how I miss him and so like that. And sometimes it's quite automatic. Not very often, but sometimes. Oh, Donnie's candle needs to be lit. Oh, it's really late and I have to get to that, right? Sometimes I pop out of bed to go do it. And that it needs to be done. That's the point. And if I get the moment for the intimate conversation, which is 99% of the time, even if it's short and sweet, it's there. Even when I go light it and I just say, I love you, and pop back in bed, and I do love him, and pop back in bed, it's done. And it's not done, it's done out of the heart. It's done out of a ritual. It's done out of an offering. It's done out of a commitment. It's done out of remembering. It's done out of, so like that. So with the nature spirits, with God, with your heart, with someone you love, with the prayers that you give to someone else, it takes nothing out of my day. It only adds to my evening. And yeah, there it is. And yeah. I'm the most normal human being that I know. I know other normal human beings, but I'm the most normal human being that I'm aware of. I feel that all Mahatmas and saints and sages and gurus and real genuine loving people are just the most normal people on earth. Nothing special. What, Gabriella?
Thank you so much, Shanti Mai.
Thank you too.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. You're on your show then.
Yeah, namaste, Shanti Mai.
How are you?
Just fine. Sitting in the beautiful nature this time. And
yeah. Where are you? You look like you're at a park or something.
Look.
Beautiful field. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah. Are you in Germany?
Yeah, in Bavaria. It's close to Ammersee.
Oh, nice.
The index, a very famous place. Yeah. So this morning I had a very strong feeling to speak with you about sexuality and the connection with childhood and things like this. But also I had the feeling that it's perhaps very intimate. And if I'm coming to you now in 3 weeks, I will see you and I'm very happy to visit your place. And so we could have time to talk about it. And therefore I took the chance to talk about the Bhagavad Gita, because since long time, I wanted to share something with the Bhagavad Gita. So I'm with a spiritual master since 2016, and I was reading Bhagavad Gita completely. What is that?
Okay. We'll wait a second until that's dealt with. That's just part of being on a computer. You are okay. A spiritual master? You call yourself a spiritual master?
No, not me. Somebody. I'm with an enlightened master. He's from Hinduistic tradition.
Who is it?
Paramahamsa Vishwananda.
Okay, I'll look him up.
He's from Mauritius Island, and he has an ashram in close to Wiesbaden.
Durga knows him.
Yeah. So I love him really very much because if I look in his eyes and I see the peace and the freedom and really, I'm very attached to him. Like to you also. I'm very attached to you.
Thank you.
I love you very much. So it's really, I love so much to be with you, really. But with Bhagavad Gita, you brought me again to look in the Bhagavad Gita again, because I was so downturned by the Bhagavad Gita that I couldn't enjoy your feelings of it's the most spiritual book. I was like,
I didn't say it was the most spiritual book. I didn't say that. So don't go ahead. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, that you like it and it's very insightful or something.
Fine read, but I don't know what the most spiritual book actually is. So
So I read it in English completely, and there was a situation in the ashram when there was like a flower. We prepared flower for altars, and I was smelling the flower, and they said, oh, it's not allowed, it's not allowed. So they were so strict.
Why would you smell a flower that you're giving to someone else?
Because I want to see if it really smells nice.
It's not yours. It's like eating it off of a plate and handing it to somebody to say, here's a dinner. You do not take what you are giving. So I understand why you got the response that you did. And you don't set them on the ground, because why don't you set them on the ground? You learn the history of these things. The reason you don't set a mala on the ground is because flowers lay over the ground. They never are grounded. So they're already ethereal, you see. They're already ethereal. And if you put them on the ground, you ground them. Huh? So you give it that ethereal flower. And you never smell a flower that you're going to give to a Mahatma or God, I would say even to your friends, because that's for them to smell, not for you to smell. It's like putting on their deodorant or something and handing it to them and saying, here's a present for you. You don't use the present before you give it. That's the point.
Yeah, I understand, and I can feel this, everything. But on the other side, I found in the same Bhagavad Gita, I found the story of, I don't know the name now, and she did the same, and she said when she got shouted, why she's trying the food she's giving to somebody coming. And she said, I would never give a food which doesn't taste good. And then all in the Bhagavad Gita, you find all this, both sides, there's not one side. So I found that if I put this inside, I feel like, yes, I did right, because I did intuitively with a lot of love. I didn't do it with, and so I found some of these different things where I found exactly the opposite things, but I got so much shouted and put down why I did this. It's not allowed. And I didn't like this.
You weren't put down. You took it personally.
Yes. Okay.
They were handing you a history. They were handing you a tradition, but you took personally, you said, I got put down. No, you didn't get put down. You get information about how to proceed well.
Yes, thank you. sure. Yeah, that's good.
So actually, it's a very beautiful thing they gave you. Beautiful thing they gave you. Here, when you bring a flower here, and maybe somebody says it with a smart attitude. I'm sorry about that. But yes or no, when you give something like a flower, you give the whole of it, not part of it. You don't take anything away. And, you know, here in Teruvalla, people can taste the food, but they have to take the food with one spoon, throw that spoon out, and take another spoon into the food. They're never allowed to put the food or put a spoon to their mouth and in the food. Mm-hmm. And it's a way of caring And you got to get over this idea that you do things wrong. You do things wrong. You do. We do.
Yeah, and that's right.
Yeah, I sometimes corrected about it. And oftentimes it is just information, but sometimes we take it so personally that it just hurts us. And well, okay, there you are in a world of hurt. Anyhow, yeah. What about the Bhagavad Gita?
The Bhagavad Gita, I was reading it, half of it in German language. It was translated. And even in Germany, I have more difficulties to read it because for me, it's too moralic, it's too religious, it's too much. So I feel really very deep insights, but then I get this feeling of it's too religious, it's too moral.
And you're judgmental.
What?
You're too judgmental.
Yeah, so I'm very judgmental. It's okay. Yeah.
Well, if you want to live with that, okay. But what you do is you cut things that are really beautiful and really nurturing away. You know, one of the things about the Gita is it's quite cultural. And in some ways, this cultural... But if you just relax in it, it is such a transmission of wisdom that it's Well, Einstein liked it very much, and what was this guy Steiner? He liked it very much, and these brilliant people love it very much because it speaks to their heart. And I think this is really good for you to know that what you resist, you might not resist it just once and see how it feeds you and see how it lifts you. And maybe not the Gita, I don't know what it would be, but too religious. What is, you know, religion means to realign. Uh-huh. And where it's come to today, there's still extraordinary saints and sages in these systems. Wonderful, wonderful people. So, and there's really some very dark, 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 dark souls. So you have, I would say that you have to take everything for when you meet it. And not make a generalization. And I don't know how you could be too religious. Krishna's just talking to you about yourself. You are, let me see what you are. Hold on, I have my Gita here. I love my Gita. See, it's so worn. See? Uh-huh. So let's just take valiant Arjuna, though delusion in the shape of pairs of opposites, right there. Delusion in the pair in the shape of pair of opposites. Delusion comes in duality, is what he's saying. Delusion is ignorance of one's true nature. It doesn't mean you're stupid. Very, very brilliant people can be ignorant. Oh, valiant Arjuna, through delusion in the shape of pairs of opposites, such as pleasure and pain, born of desire and hatred, all living creatures in this world are falling prey to infatuation. Powerful. I can open any page, any passage.
Which one was it? Which?
Oh, let's see. Oh, I lost it. No, it's...
I couldn't understand the verse.
Yeah, it's seventh chapter, and it's the 27th verse.
Which chapter?
Seventh.
Seventh chapter, 27th verse. Okay, thank you.
Sometimes I kiss my Gita. It just gives so much. And I'm not trying to sell the Gita for you because I don't know if it's your spiritual book. I don't know if it moves. It's not my spiritual book either. I just love it. I love that you. I love also anything that speaks of what's true in everyone and in everything.
Yeah, and I want to thank you because when you spoke about the Gita, about the three ways from what you brought from India, you brought me the gunas, I think something. Mm-hmm. You brought me very close inside the Bhagavad Gita, and I could understand some bigger picture. And I was very happy because I started reading again in Bhagavad Gita. Good so thank you very much.
One thing I want to say though about the Gita. Some of it's very cultural.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there it's not that you skip over that, but you understand that this is cultural. The Garuda bird is not something that's in my culture. A man bird is not something that's in my culture. I'm fascinated that it's in anyone's culture. And I don't know how to perceive it, so I don't bother with it. I just say Garuda is a man bird. I don't have to believe or disbelieve. This is something that's really, really very, very clean. Is to skip believing or disbelieving and let the sun shine in.
Thank you.
That's what I would do if I were you.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Namaste. Thank you.
Thank you too. I'm glad you're reading the Gita. Hey Adi, it's dark in your house. How come?
It's early. Namaste, Shantimani. Thank you so much. I mean, I'm loving this satsang as every satsang. This whole discussion of worship and offering inspires me so much just to never make a prayer mechanical.
Yeah, or take things for granted, huh?
Yeah. I love the Ter Desacha story with the nature spirits. I want, my heart keeps wanting to share one last story of forgiveness. It was one of my favorite stories. And whole way of reconciliation. I believe in that so much more than the court process.
Yes.
But anyway, this is a story in South Africa where Mandela, who's always been one of my heroes, brought together people who had been victims of, you know, racism in South Africa before, you know, things changed, and those who had perpetrated them.
The apartheid.
Yep, yep.
Mm-hmm.
And, so there was a case where brought a woman, Black Afrikaner, whose husband was killed by a white Afrikaner. They brought them together to talk, and they asked her what she would like. So you can imagine she's facing the man who killed her husband, and he's just like shaking in his boots. And she says, I would like three things. I would like to have you take me to where you killed him to see if there's anything of his possessions or anything that I would like. Two, I would like you to accept my forgiveness for killing him. And three, I would like you to be my son and I come visit you every month. I mean, that's just, to me, mind-boggling. It's over the top in terms of love. It's one of my favorite stories.
Yeah, I love it too. And the court system did step in because he must have gone to jail. Is that right?
I never heard that part. No.
If she's going to, yeah, I imagine that they're not going to let somebody who killed somebody not go to jail. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing with the reconciliation. You remember Amelia's, case here in Baltimore.
Amelia's case. Tell me about it.
That's a wonderful woman whose father was, well, when she was a little girl at four, there was a wild party next door, and her father went to, quiet it down, and one of the people shot him. So she lost her father when she was four, she and her twin brother. And she made, it was the same kind of reconciliation. I mean, it's not that the court wasn't involved, but her mother wanted to meet with him and she forgave him and so forth. She made a quilt. She was going to art school. She made a quilt and she showed it to you. And the quilt had actually newspaper clippings of,
That's right. I remember.
But she had all these prayers because the guy who took her father's life had a child. And she said, may you always, I forget the details, have a wonderful relationship with your son. I mean, she said all these prayers for him and his son.
Yeah, this is the way.
Yeah.
And even when you're really irritated with somebody, like I was saying last week about when these people, women, they cut me off. They came around me, cut me off. Maybe I was going slow. Blue wasn't the fastest truck on the highway. But they came and they cut me off. And then I started to follow them. You remember me saying this? Mm-hmm. And I followed them for, I think, at least 3 or 4 miles into a parking lot at a shopping center. And I got out of my truck and they were looking at me like, oh. Of course, there was not the threat that there is today if you get out of your truck. But I said to him, I'm so sorry. I've never really done that to anyone. And I didn't want to do it to you. And I want to say I'm sorry. So even little things, and oftentimes just the little things, because not all of us are going to have our relatives murdered by someone, thank God. But just the little things that you get irritated by, just turn around and bless that person. Well, God bless you. There's something in this for you, and there's something in it for me. Mm-hmm. May your day go well. Anything. Just to turn it around. And it changes the energy, like the offering changes the energy with the nature spirits. It's just such a good example of energy change for an offering. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Welcome.
Thank you, too. Thank you, too, Adi. I think we're... Our satsang is complete. Natalia, you will be the last, and then we will close. The satsang will complete. Have you been writing to me?
Yes. Yeah, I just wanted to offer this light to the presence in all. Back to this discussion about psychological wellness and enlightenment and how they don't work together.
We talk about enlightenment. Somehow I'm getting a echo.
It's his echo.
What's he need
to mute while you're speaking?
He needs to mute while I'm speaking. And then he can turn on.
Okay.
I didn't say anything about enlightenment and mental illness at all. We spoke about mental illness, but I didn't speak about enlightenment. I haven't used that word in this entire satsang. Go ahead, please.
Needs to be unmuted.
Unmute.
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I couldn't hear you just then, so I don't know.
Hey, let's try it again. Now there's no. That's good. I didn't speak about enlightenment at all. I never used that word during the entire satsang.
Okay.
I just want to get straight so we can have a good conversation.
No, but that is why I'm here. Yeah.
What's on your mind and what's on your heart?
Well, mental wellness, there needs to be my intention is to flood this unconscious light, the unconscious life with light. And I know what I should be doing. I know better and the practices that can get me to presence, but I can't hold the light.
What are you talking about? You can't hold the light.
Because
of your habits?
Yes. But also, but the habits are themselves a survival, an emotional self-regulation.
Self-preservation or regulation?
Regulation.
Good. I want to hear from him. What did you say? Regulation or preservation?
Regulation.
Okay.
So when I do shift into presence and center into it, a few moments later, what comes up is all of the psychological stuff. And
why do you let all the psychological stuff, why do you give your attention there? You're a smart man. You're also a spiritually ignited man. You're also a heartful man. So why do you give your attention there? Why are you focusing there?
I'm disintegrated. So there are pieces of me that are a baby, are a toddler, are different frozen parts of consciousness.
Nonsense.
And there is a conscious adult in me scrambling to put it together, integrate.
You're putting yourself in all kinds of different ideas. Stop it.
Okay.
Yeah, stop it. Okay. Right? Stop it. Bury the child. He's already gone. I hope you don't have a psychologist who's encouraging all of this. I know somebody who also has this idea about the child being in them, and it never goes away because the psychologist plays the game all the time. You are an adult man, a beautiful adult man. Your childhood is long gone. You have innocence in you. There's no doubt about it. There's a childlike nature in you. There's no doubt about that either. But you are a full-grown man looking for your Mahatmaship. Looking for your spiritual maturity. Is that not true? Because
that
otherwise...
is true.
Yeah, you and I can do nothing together as long as you hold on to to this idea of all these chopped areas of your personality. And you're doing that. You're giving it attention.
Yeah, I have been doing that.
Don't make yourself sick. Don't do that to yourself. Don't do it to yourself. And maybe it takes time to take that out of your system, that awareness out of your system. I don't know how far it's pounded into you, but it's not true. Is that true or not? How old are you?
37.
37, good age. So there's not a child in you. We can talk about things that may be, that may linger, but stop solidifying these personalities and splitting yourself in all kinds of areas. You have to stop that. I'm not a psychologist, so I don't know how to deal with it. I can only take you to heaven inside your heart. And you, if you're going to make any obstacles for that, you yourself have to remove them. I love you. You know that.
Thank you.
Oh,
I've been on this whole trajectory of make the person well as the foundation to hold light. And
well, hold on. Is this person sick? Probably.
Not particularly.
And what do you have to make well? You make up stuff to make yourself well. You're perfectly fine as you are.
There's crookedness. There's all sorts of...
Yeah, that's there in everyone, by the way.
Yeah, I've noticed.
Okay, and be kind to people because they're trying to get through it too.
Yeah.
Not everybody, but probably a lot of the people are darn well attempting to get through this nonsense as well. No, you bet. Are you going to come here this year?
I'm trying to, yeah. I'm talking to Indra.
Uh-huh. Well, when you come, don't need a lot of attention and you'll get a lot of attention.
Okay.
we're going to get through this. This is just mental acrobatics.
No, I can see that too.
Yeah, well, good. I'm really glad that you can, because otherwise you and I have nothing to do together until you can see it.
Only
because I don't have the skill for it, not because there's anything wrong with you. I don't have the skill for fixing mentally ill people.
I'm not asking you to.
No.
And I won't do that.
No.
Well, let's just see. I'm open.
I know you are.
Okay.
Yeah, and we're going to get through this and get you on the straight and narrow. And there's going to be some crooks in the straight and narrow. There's some ups and there's some downs.
Wonderful.
I love you. Take care. Yeah, I'll see you this summer. Hello, Natalia.
Hello, Shantimai. Namaste. I just want to share a little story about mental illness and being normal.
About what is it?
Mental illness. Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you clearly. And camera still, please.
Okay.
Come on, you're making me dizzy. And now we're ready to talk. Go ahead.
Good. About mental illness and being normal. It was a colleague of mine who was telling me of his wife. She was mentally ill and they had a child who was suffering. And then he was also, I think there was some violence also involved. And then one day the boy was asked in school what he would like to become. And he said, "I just want to be normal." And my friend was so touched by the statement of his son. And years later, I've met him again. And at that time, he said about himself that he is spiritual now. He didn't have a guru or anything, but something had changed in him and his whole home situation.
How old is this person?
He is about 37.
Uh-huh. And
his whole situation at home had turned to the good because of the change in him.
You know about it. I've seen the change in you, and I've seen the changes happen all around you. It's very normal. Well, I don't know what the word normal actually means. If that fellow would have said, I want to be normal to me, I would have asked him what he means by that. What is
no, normal? It was the boy. It was his son in school who said it.
So, yeah, so I would still ask the boy what he meant by that. As long as he could talk, if he was even 2 years old, I'd ask him what he was talking about. What do you mean by that? Because I'd like to hear what he means by that. But you change a little thing, it ripples out into the universe. You change something very small. Look at how you were with your father, and look how you approached your father the second time. The third time, it returned a little bit, but you had changed. So it had changed something in you. Isn't that true? Is it true?
Yes.
Yeah. How is that going? How is your father?
He is still the same, but sometimes he is okay.
Well, he's okay the same.
Mm-hmm.
I was just speaking with someone over the satsang over a couple weeks ago, some time ago. And this person had a mother that was a hoarder. You know what hoarding is?
Yes. My mother's one.
Okay. And there was all kinds of judgment on her mother about it, just like constant. And I said, why don't you just love her? What is all this? She is that she is. So what? What she really requires is love. She's not going to change. Your father's not going to change. And if he does change, good. But if he doesn't change, so what? What's required is love. Isn't that required in your life, that you don't want to be judged for the way that you are, no matter what?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yes.
Okay, you're not a hoarder. Okay, you're not angry old being. But so what? Still the medicine that is required for the hoarder and for the angry man and for the one who doesn't understand is to love them regardless of that. Regardless of that, stop wanting. Now, I'm not saying you are, but maybe you are. Stop wanting people to change before you enter love with them. Let them be who they are. They're doing what they're doing because of the lack of love in their life. At least they don't feel it. It's particularly hoarders. They're just filling up their hearts with whatever item they can find because they haven't felt, and it may be their point, not anyone else's point, but they haven't felt loved.
Quote that goes, if you are still angry at someone who refuses to change, then you also refuse to change.
Yeah, that's very beautiful. Mm-hmm. Antisa just told a really beautiful statement that says, if you're still angry at somebody that refuses to change, then you refuse to change. That's absolutely 100% accurate, spot on. So nothing changes and no healing, so to speak. I'm not fond of the word healing. I think it's way overused on things that people aren't even sick about. So, yeah, so you blame the person that isn't changing, and you yourself won't bother. I'm talking to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
They can talk to everyone about it. What touches them in satsang, they can often offer to others as well. Satsang can ripple. Hmm. So I don't understand holding love back, and I don't understand wanting a person to be a certain way before you give them the dignity of love. Maybe you're not going to be around them. Maybe they still irritate you. I get that. But there is an undercurrent of love that God has for everything. And that's in your heart. That lives in your heart. So you may not even want to be around a person, but there is an undercurrent of love that you cannot deny, and you will always support and always be a part of somehow. Mm-hmm. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Yeah. I would have asked the boy what he meant by normal. I would like to have heard what he had to say. And I'm glad that your friend made a shift. You don't have to have a guru to make a shift. It is said that the guru will introduce you to yourself. Mm-hmm. That happened in my case for sure.
Thank you,
Namaste.
Thank you, too.
Namaste. Om Shri Satchi Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, Paramatma Ki Jai, Gurudev Bhagawan Ki Jai, Satya Sangha Ki Jai. Namaste, everyone. See you next week, if I'm lucky. Sounds off, Primo.
Check it, check it.
чеке, нитая. Иде, уэре, уэре, иде, уэре, уэре, нита, учу. Иде, уэре, уэре, иде, уэре, уэре, нита, учу. Ire were were nita ya ochakini ba nita ochu cheke 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 nita ya ire were were Nita ya ide wa.